Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
The Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Shartok. Joining this week, as she has so many other times, and we so appreciate it, is New York State Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples Stokes, a Democrat. Peoples Stokes serves Buffalo's 141st Assembly District. Welcome back, Majority Leader Peoples Stokes. We're so happy to have you.
Alan, it's nice to be with you again.
So, the big news is that Kathy Hochul becomes the first female governor in the wake of Cuomo's resignation. She will, of course, hail from your area, Western New York, very much like you. First, your reaction to Hochul taking the reins, and talk about your personal relationship with the governor, if you would be so kind.
Well, I think it's an exciting time for the state of New York. I think people are going to be very pleased with her service, because she's an extraordinary woman and a valued, principled Democrat. And I think she's going to do great. I am pleased to have known her since 1998, maybe a little bit before then. But I ran for Congress in 98, challenging then Congressman Jack Quinn, who was from Hamburg. And by the way, the governor was a town council member in Hamburg. I didn't really know many Democrats out there, but she was the one that embraced me. She was the one that took me around in that community. She was the one that told me about events that were going on where I can go and meet and talk with voters. And so we have had a great relationship ever since then. And I am just proud of her being the first woman. But I know that's not going to be her legacy. Her legacy is going to be a phenomenal administration that serves the people of the state of New York.
So what mistakes does she have to avoid?
I think you have to avoid the mistake of trying to make everybody happy. In a democracy, what's important is doing things that are in the best interest of the masses of people. And sometimes that doesn't necessarily make everybody happy. And so I think that she has to avoid that pitfall of wanting to do that, because generally we do, particularly as women, we like to make everybody happy. But sometimes you really can't. You have to just do what's in the best interest of the masses. And I'm hopeful that she will stay true to that, because I believe that's who she is as a person.
Well, she is the first woman. Do you expect that there will be absolute differences as a result of a woman ruling as opposed to a man?
I actually do. I think the democratic values of the former governor and the current governor are similar. But I think the manner in which they're delivered, particularly as it relates to having relationships with the legislature, will be remarkably different between the two administrations. And I think that is going to be what's going to lift her in a way that I think in many ways brought him down.
So, to put it mildly, the legislature had a big role in Cuomo's demise.
Yes.
And a big role in her elevation to governor. Are there any repercussions as a result of the legislature getting this thing done? It took a little courage, didn't it?
Well, here's the thing. She understands that the legislature, both the Senate and the Assembly, are co-equal partners in the state government. And I'm not so sure that the former governor either understood that or would allow that system to work like it should. I believe she will, and I believe that's going to be a benefit to the entire state.
Now, I see she's keeping some of Cuomo's advisors. The health commissioner, for example, is the one that raised my eyebrow, because so much of what was held against him was done in concert with the health department. What do you think the results of that are? You think it's just temporary and that she'll make some changes as she goes on?
I think she possibly could, but you do have to remember that the manner in which Cuomo led was that even though your opinion was important as a scientist, as, you know, the commissioner of health was or is, his opinion was more important. So it's not so much to do what you think should be done or what is right, but to do what he wanted you to do. And I think because we're, you know, still in the middle of this pandemic, unfortunately, because there's so many of our citizens who just refuse to abide by, you know, some rules that will help us get through this. I think she needs to keep somebody who is a doctor who knows the issue well. And I think that she will allow him to administer what needs to happen in the interest of the people. Now, should that need to change somewhere down the line, she finds someone else who is in the same agency or without the agency who could provide the services that, you know, New York State citizens deserve, I think she might possibly make some changes. But for right now, from Monday to Tuesday, I don't think you make those decisions that quickly. And I think it's the right thing to do to keep him in place until we at least figure out how to get through this current episode that we're having with the coronavirus. And perhaps there may be some changes afterwards. But right now, I think it's the right decision.
Let me ask you a political question, because you are, of course, as we used to say on the West Side, an ace when it comes to politics, being the high guard in the deck. There is some speculation by me, among others, that the person who really brought Cuomo down was the Attorney General of the state of New York, and that she might want to run in a primary in about 8 months against this governor. I hate to put you on the spot, but what do you make of that?
Well, I mean, I think that she probably won't be the only person who might desire to challenge in a primary. And I think we'll have to wait until that time comes to see how that flows. But clearly, Tish James, you know, she is a statewide elected already. And so I think she'll be taking that into consideration. I think you cannot take Governor Hochul for granted. She is going to do what it takes to, you know, improve her presence across the state. She has been in all 62 counties. And by the way, she just doesn't go into these counties, in my estimation, because I know her, and rail off the script that was given to her by the governor to move forward his agenda. She met with people. She engaged the local Democrats. She engaged the local people. She developed relationships throughout all of these 62 counties. Now, is it enough for her to win an election in a contested primary? That's left to be seen. But I assure you that she will leave no stone unturned to make sure that she's successful. And again, I think Tish James will not be the only one who will have some interest in becoming the next governor. Keep in mind, whoever that is going to be challenging a historic governor, one that we've never seen before in the history of the state. And that is a woman who has all of the capabilities to do a great job. And I believe that her record will be clear once the election starts.
Okay, so then that leads me to ask, not only is she unique in her taking over as a woman, but also as an upstater. What does that mean to you as the majority leader, second in command of the New York State Assembly?
Well, that means that, you know, we have been saying for decades that this is one state. Now, here's our opportunity to demonstrate to the citizenry that one state is as important as it is stated, because it's going to be shown through action.
Now, the legislature played a much more dramatic role than we are used to seeing. Now, it may be that they were playing it, but we weren't seeing it. But have you noticed esprit de corps in the legislature itself improving as a result of the members putting their backs to this potential impeachment for Cuomo and insistence that he go?
No, I think a lot of the things that he's been accused of, and I believe will be adjudicated through the court systems and through the Department of Justice, as well as through the Attorney General's office, it's going to solve the issues that people have concerns about him with. But the personal relationship that he had with the legislature clearly motivated a lot of people to say, you know what, I've just had enough of him. I've had enough of his bullying style. I've had enough of him disrespecting me and disrespecting the legislature. And since he's been accused of these things, he should just go. And as it turns out, now he's gone. And so I think it does empower the legislature in their relationship with the executive branch of government, without a doubt.
But have you noticed, I use the word esprit de corps, but have you noticed a difference in the members of the legislature looking in a mirror and saying, I'm a player here?
No, I think, well, during my term in the legislature, I think we've always felt as though we were players here. But I'm not so sure that the executive branch felt the same way. Mm-hmm. And in many, many ways, because he didn't feel that way, he pushed back on opportunities for the legislative branch to, you know, take his rightful position. And that pushback caused him to have a lot of enemies. In a lot of ways, again, that's why he's gone, because he created so many enemies.
Well, I agree with that, but that was also unnecessary on his part. I mean, when the great book on leadership in New York State is written, and there's a section on what not to do, that'll be a section, won't it?
That will be. You don't mess with the legislature.
Work with the legislature.
Work with us. Don't intimidate us.
And don't make enemies if you can avoid them.
I don't think that's something
that he really cared that much about. In fact, quite the opposite.
Well, he probably cares a little more about it now than he did before.
Now, there is a lot of talk about the fact that they used to be called three men in a room, and now two women in the room. What, in fact, will be the ramifications?
Well, I don't know that there'll be necessarily any ramifications. I think, you know, the three men in the room was always just, in my opinion, media hype, because quite honestly, the man who represents the state assembly doesn't go into the room without the opinion of 107 people.
Is that
and
right?
Men and women. That's right.
I've
sat there for almost 20 years, and so I know that that's right. And when something came out of the room that needed to be mentioned to the 107 members, that man came back and gave it to us, and we still had an opportunity to weigh in on it. And so I really believe that that's not going to be different. With two women in the room, they are still going to have to hear the opinion, is, albeit from the leader of respective houses, they're going to have to hear the opinion of all senators and all assembly members given to her, meaning Kathy Hochul, by the leadership that has been selected to represent those houses.
I want to come back to that in one second, but first I want to remind everybody who they're listening to. Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes, there's the speaker, and then there is Crystal Peoples-Stokes next in line. And we know that New York State politics have always been centered in New York City. And now through, you know, the fact that Andrew Cuomo chose a person to balance himself, a woman, and an upstater, do you think upstate politics will forever be influenced by this?
I think so. And let's remember, first of all, I am the majority leader in the state assembly, not the speaker.
Andrea Stewart-Cousin
is the majority leader in the Senate.
Right.
Which is a whole different role than the majority leader in the assembly. But, you know, that's notwithstanding that, I think people will have the opportunity to see. And remember, even though he picked her to be his running mate some years ago, in his last election, he did not want her to run. But it was the women of the legislature, both assembly and Senate, who stood behind her and pushed her campaign forward. And her hard work that she had been doing across the state, representing his office in 62 counties, is what pushed her forward. And she did have opposition from downstate in her last election as a lieutenant governor, yet she won. And so there's a demonstration that this one state concept that we often have been talking about is becoming a reality in terms of representation. And I think it's almost, if you will, a divine order.
I love that. Divine order. How? God-given?
Yes. It's time. It's time for New York to, you know, walk into its true destiny, which is one state, where all statewide don't necessarily have to be living in downstate New York.
Majority Leader, I want to ask you this. Ethics reform. She mentioned ethics reform. Look, we know that there has been an opportunity for a long time to make some changes in the way in which the government does its business. What can you think of that needs to be done to change the ethical standards in Albany?
Well, I will say this, is that I don't believe that we're able to legislate morality. People who are immoral, whether they get elected to office or not, are just simply immoral. And I don't believe we can create enough laws to deal with that. But I'm willing, just like most of my colleagues are, is to look at what we've already done as it relates to ethics and see where there, you know, where there are gaps at that need to be closed, and see if there may not be any gaps that need to be closed. Maybe the enforcement just needs to be stronger, swifter, and without less minutia, if you will. But again, I'm not sure that you can legislate anybody's decision to be immoral, because that is a heartfelt position. When people know better, they should do better.
So is there any specific thing that you think needs to be done to improve ethical behavior? You may be minutiae, but is there any specific thing that you'd like to see done? For example, let me give you an example. J. Cope, which has been set up, which was heavily set up by the governor, and they didn't seem willing to do anything. Should that be changed?
I'm not even sure we need a J. Cope. I mean, unless you have rules in place, you either follow the rules or you get out.
Well, who gets you out? That's the problem. In other words, you either follow
the legislature
rules.
This should be the legislature that gets you out.
So
we're the ones who approve the rules, and so this is the rule. You've broken it. If it's a rule that calls for some court systems or legal systems, then you got to go through that, because there is a rule of law here that you don't want to go around, because you want everybody to be treated the same way. So maybe there's not a need for J. Cope. I'm not sure. But one of the things that I have asked my senior staff to do is, you know, to look at all of the ethic rules that we have in place and let us do our own perusal of what's missing, where the gaps are, and how we can close them. Can I give you the answer to that right today? No, I can't, but I can tell you that I will be looking into it.
And you know how much respect I have for you. But there will be people listening to this radio show who will say, wait a second now, the legislature, I'm not even sure that there should be a J. Cope or whatever we call it, J. Joke sometimes. Who is going to sit for the babysitter while the babysitter is sitting for somebody else?
Well, that insinuates that there is a lack of trust in the legislature, in the government that's been
yes.
elected.
Right.
And I get you. There is a lack of trust, but people who generally are not trustworthy have a hard time trusting other people. And that's not me. So I believe that we can figure out a way to look at what we've already done with ethic rules. And if there is no need for J. Cope, which quite honestly is outside of the legislature, it's a separate body, maybe we don't need that. Or maybe we need it to be a more independent body that is not controlled by the executive legislature or otherwise. Maybe we just need to set up a whole new system that begins to look at this. I'm not sure how that's going to work. But I do know what we don't need is more government. We need to make sure what we have already works. And so, from my opinion, it calls for a deep dive into what's existing and how we fix it.
Majority Leader, I have this question for you. Shelley Silver, who has appeared on this show many times in the past, sits in prison. You said before that the legislature runs basically leadership. They make the decision, all of those people who are sitting there. Do you think that was the case when Shelley was the speaker? You said you were there for 20 years. What do you think?
Do I think that he was a good leader for us as it related to going to speak to the governor and dealing with the budget issues and all that? I do think that. But I think that what he did that got him convicted in court was a violation of the law.
I see. Okay, I get that. So there will be those, and you've sort of implied it here, that say Andrew Cuomo was an authoritarian. And, you know, now I'll come back to this question I'm just sort of harping on, and that is, are all the rules in place so that everybody who gets elected to the legislature has a true and equal share in decision-making, or will it always be that the speaker and you, the majority leader, are the bosses?
No, I think everybody who gets elected to the legislature does have a true voice. They represent the people who sent them there, and that has to be maintained. It has to be maintained.
But you don't think, Majority Leader, that when you're a backbencher, as they say in Great Britain, and when you're a backbencher, that you really have the kind of oomph that you really are entitled to?
I do think that, but your challenge as an elected member of a 150-member body, and more specifically, a 107-member Democratic Conference, is to get people to agree with you. It's still about a majority. And so that's the speaker's challenge, and that's part of my challenge to assist him, is to get people agreeing all on one level. Now, there are going to be some people who will never agree with that, and to suggest that they're not fairly representing their district, I think is not true. I think that they are, but their district, as well as themselves, understand, I believe, that, you know, this is democracy and the majority rules. And so if 102 people want to go one direction and the other five don't, it's not that they aren't heard. It's that they haven't been able to convince the other 102 that that's the direction we should go.
Let's talk a little bit about the Delta variant. In your opinion, what needs to be done to make New Yorkers safer?
I think people need to wear masks and take a vaccine. That's what I think. I'm actually a person who didn't take flu shots, but I'm also a person who have literally seen almost 20 people that I know personally die because they caught what some people want to intimate as a cold. It wasn't a cold. It was COVID, a respiratory disease that will take you out. And it's so contagious that it's unfair for someone to think that they don't have a responsibility to protect me, since I am willing to take a vaccine, and my family, they should be willing to do the same thing. So I think that's what needs to happen. How do you get that to happen? I'm going to leave that one to you and other folks who may be able to figure out why these folks are thinking that way. I can't get that part.
Well, you and I share that. I can't get it either. But then there's the question of mandates. In other words, if you don't do this, you get punished in some way or another. And there are a lot of those proposals out there now. Do you think there's a role for government to say, you know, if you didn't go to fight in World War II, you could be arrested? If you don't protect the people go ahead.
There is a role for government to say, if you don't wear a seatbelt, you're going to get a ticket.
Right.
And by the way, if you smoke a cigarette in the car with your children, you're going to get charged. The government does things, has mandates to protect citizenry. That's all this is about.
Let's talk a little bit, if we can, about legalized marijuana. Cuomo dragged his feet on appointing members of the Cannabis Commission, which must happen before the legal industry can be set up. You've been a big supporter of legalization, as have I. Will Hochul move quickly on this?
Yes. Yes, she will. I've already had the conversations. By the way, I had the conversations before she was even knew what date she might be sworn in. We talked about this earlier in the summer. I mean, when we knew that he was either going to be impeached or he was going to leave, she straight asked me, what should I be focused on? And we railed off a number of things. But I told her, from a selfish perspective, in my estimation, it needs to be put in the control board for the Office of Cannabis Management in place so that we can move forward with setting up some regulations. Because once you legalize a product and you don't put a regulatory process in place, the market goes away. And that's what's happening now. And so in order to pull that back, we got to get to the table. We got to put some regulatory pieces in place. And she's ready to do that.
And so you think the market has gone away? I live over here in Massachusetts, right over the line in New York, and we see an awful lot of New York license plates coming over here.
Are you still seeing them? Yeah.
Indeed. And because I don't think all the T's have been crossed and the I's have been, dotted in New York State, and I think that's part of the consequences.
Well, one of the things that makes me feel a little bit more comfortable about her swift movement on this is that some of the people who worked on the second floor with the former governor on this topic might end up staying. And these people are super smart on this topic in terms of regulatory process throughout the country, in fact, even including Canada. So I believe that they're going to come up with a structure for a regulatory system with some quickness. I won't say by the end of the year, because quite honestly, it depends on who to have sitting around the table that are members of the board. But I believe once she calls for the chair and executive director process to happen through Senate confirmation, that we will be off and rolling and we will get a swift result.
And the last question on that topic, it has been suggested by some that people of color have not been given the appropriate role in this marijuana rollout in New York. Do you agree with that?
No, absolutely. I do not agree with that. I mean, in fact, if it hadn't been for the diversity at the front of the legislation, both two women and one woman of color, we wouldn't even be here. So I think we've always been engaged and we always will be.
Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes, a great favorite here on WAMC. You're getting to be quite a star. And I so appreciate your giving us this time. And the thing I love about having you with us is that you always tell it like it is. You don't fool around. And I thank you so much for being here and being part of what we do.
You're very welcome. It's always a pleasure to get the chance to talk to you, too. Have a great day.
Again, thanks so much for being with us.
You're so welcome.
Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.